Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. You are now talking with TD. I appreciate each of you for tuning in. Awesome show today. We have Stephania Bell to talk COVID and talk Jonnu Smith. We have Bill Barnwell. We're going to talk a little list. I know you Titans fans were not too pleased with a couple of the lists that he came out as far as where your team placed. We're going to get into that. And, of course, I am going to talk shop with Elijah. So I appreciate, again, each of you for tuning in. And we're going to kick things right off with the camp protocol for testing. We had Mike Vrabel on recently when we had the Zoom presser with him, and he got into that a little bit. He spoke about how the plan is broken into two groups, right? And so they brought a group in on the 23rd, and then they're bringing another group in on the 28th. Obviously, you know, it was rookies and select veterans. And then the 28th, they had everybody else come in, with the exception of Vic Beasley. We'll get into that a little bit later. And he said there's a seven-day window. So basically what happens is they have a test and then a self-quarantine. The next day, they go back in and test, and they self-quarantine. Then on the fourth day, they have a third COVID test. And on the fifth day, they have physicals, and they have other administrative meetings. So that's kind of how it plays out. It's really interesting how this whole thing can be controlled with common sense. And one of the things that Elijah, what we talked about, you had mentioned how the Marlins situation in Major League Baseball, it resulted from guys being careless. And I think that's really the main thing that we have to recognize and understand, that carelessness, it's different. Like, in this situation, you have a mistake, and then you have a four-letter word, up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's the thing that the guys have to really understand. So there's a lot that's being done as far as breaking up the bubble and turning that into a series of meetings. As Vrabel said, they have assigned seats. I mean, this requires the utmost discipline, right? Guys, you got to go back to the seat that you sat in that was assigned to you. There's a reason why it was assigned. That way you could go in. Once you're done with it, you're going back to that same seat after it's cleaned each time. So there's a lot that has to happen and go right. As far as the protocol for testing is concerned, you know, guys are required to get this test done. They also have to – there's an honesty, right? I don't know what the exact word – the honor system. That's going on because, you know, if – you have been in contact with someone that has tested positive for COVID-19, you know what? You have to reveal it. And as you know, Isaiah Wilson was placed on the COVID reserve list. Here's the thing. That does not mean that he tested positive. We need to understand that. It does not mean that he tested positive. It means that he either tested positive or came in contact with someone that tested positive. So there's an honor system going, and guys have to be up front. If they know of someone that tested positive that they came in contact with, it has to be done. Because if you look at the little buzzer that they have that will kind of monitor your interaction, that's in the building. That's not at home. So if, you know, let's say player X came down, you know, he tested positive and he was one of the punt returners or one of the receivers, well, you know what? That buzzer's going to track the quarterbacks. It's going to track the other receivers, which in turn could track the DBs. So that's how they could kind of trace it and try to keep control of it. But that does not extend beyond the facility. It does not extend beyond St. Thomas Sports Park. So it really, as I said, comes down to players being intelligent, players not being reckless, players understanding the significance of just a little bit of cooperation. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say a little bit. It's a lot, right? But this is something that has to happen in order for football to happen. And, you know, Mike Vrabel said that he didn't expect – I'm not going to say he didn't expect. He said that he hasn't had any conversations with anyone else about opting out. Anthony McKinney, the tackle, undrafted free agent, he did opt out. Hey, you have to respect his decision. From what I understand, there's other interactions – not interactions, but there's other familiarity with COVID. So, hey, you can't knock the man. We'll see who else may come out with it. I mean, there are – I think it's August 4th is the deadline. So we'll see what happens there. I want to get into that with our next guest, which is Stefania Bell. So we're going to go ahead and go to a break. Before we come back, let me tell you this. Talking with TD. Make sure you subscribe. iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Let's subscribe. Get that 5-star rating. Rate, review. We appreciate you. We'll be right back.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
All right, back from the break. As you hear the music going back to Cali, we are bringing in a California product who, I'm not going to say she's going back to Cali because she's doing a wonderful job in Bristol with ESPN. One of my favorites right here, Stefania Bell. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. You know, I would love to go back to Cali right about now just for a little visit. I miss California. Normally, I go back about 5 times a year, and that's just not happening this year.
Yeah, really, though. I kind of shake my head at the situation that we have because I love to travel as well. So it's unfortunate that we're not able to do that.
I know. It really is a different animal this year. The whole year has been right for everything that we do, but I will say this. I recognize that there are a lot of people, including former colleagues of mine from the medical field, who are working the front lines, even converted ortho folks who've been working the front lines in the hard hit areas. So my heart goes out to them and to all the people affected by COVID-19, and I take nothing for granted, and I'm grateful to be working, even if it means I'm staying in my house.
100% grateful to be working. I echo your thoughts there. And obviously, there are a lot of NFL players who are grateful to be working. There are guys that, you know, have opted out. How do you, like, when you look at this whole process and the guys having that option to opt out for this season, if you were in their shoes, like, how would you weigh things out? Like, what do you think really goes into that thought process and that decision?
First of all, I understand everybody waiting until the last possible moment to do so, because the way information emerges on this virus, what we understand about it, the recognition of it, the testing parameters, how you manage it, who it can impact, it's new and changing all the time. And I think it's important to remind people that we still don't understand the long-term ramifications of having COVID-19. And while it appears that there's a wide range of symptoms, going from no symptoms at all and relatively mild cases to obviously severe symptoms, hospitalization, and death being the worst possible outcome, of course, we don't really understand how the virus makes itself felt in different folks. And now there have been identified some comorbidities, some things that put people at higher risk. And I think that's the kind of information that the NFL and NFLPA, working together through a joint task force, have laid out for the players. But again, I've spoken with Dr. Tom Mayer, who's the NFLPA medical director, who has some experience in medical crisis management. He was a command physician at the Pentagon during 9/11 and handled the anthrax poisoning crisis in Washington that occurred shortly thereafter. So this is someone who not only is very well connected to the best resources when it comes to this type of thing, but certainly understands medical crisis management. And he said, you know, we are learning about this every day. That's why it's called novel and emerging. There's so many things that are yet unknown, and their job is to try and get information to the players as effectively and accurately as possible. So they've helped identify things that would put players or players' family members at greater risk, and I think giving the athletes the time to digest that and make the decision that's best for them is what they've tried to encourage. So I wouldn't be surprised if up until the deadline, folks are deciding to opt out. And it's a very individual decision. I would just ask that fans be understanding that there's no way any of us can possibly insert ourselves into anyone else's situation.
And knowing that this is just something that's constantly evolving, it's got to be a little more difficult to have some type of precise plan. Like, you look at Major League Baseball, this breakout with the Marlins, and then how everything is going about. You know, people are saying, oh, well, hey, how did they not foresee this? But how can you literally see that happening in the future? So when you look at that, does that really make it a lot more difficult for someone like Thomas Mayer to be able to put together a precise plan to address if that should happen?
Absolutely. And I think you've got a couple of issues. One is this is not a sport in the NFL that can contain itself to a bubble.
Right.
We have teams that will be traveling, and we also have athletes who will be returning home daily. Training camp is different this year. Teams are at their home parks. Many athletes are staying home. I haven't really heard yet. Some teams might be doing it differently if they've got a hotel close by, but athletes that I've spoken to are returning home. So every time they leave the facilities, by the way, have gone to great lengths. Their infection control processes are incredible, doing everything they can to keep the facilities essentially virus-free. But every day when someone leaves, there's a potential for introducing that virus back in when they return. So being out of a bubble is more challenging. And you referenced baseball. They're really the first sport to return out of a bubble. Today, the NBA reports that they have zero positive tests. This is now going back since, I believe, July 13th, but essentially in the bubble, they've remained virus-free. Major League Baseball is out of a bubble with teams traveling, and, you know, the Marlins got hit hard. It's a team that's located in one of the hot spots in the country, and I think what it should make us all reflect upon is the fact that these teams are in communities where the virus is behaving differently. So some teams might be more challenged than others to stay virus-free simply because of the nature of the folks living in that community that's impacted. The NFL and NFLPA have gone to great lengths to try and educate the players. They've made videos about COVID. They have resources available for them. But individual responsibility is going to play a big part in this season. And even then, with everybody following best practices, there's still the potential for infection.
One of the things, well, the many things that I'm impressed with as far as your work is concerned is kind of like that injury predictor side of things. And when you look at camp being the way it's going to be, where there's a ramp-up period and there wasn't an off season as far as OTAs and mini camp, how do you look at these guys coming in and not having that process to kind of get together during mini camp? Do you think that makes them more susceptible to injury?
I think that's everyone's collective worry. Whether that actually happens or not remains to be seen. So you mentioned all the challenges with no OTAs and nothing that was done in the off season. I'm sure there were some virtual meetings and conversations and virtual workout communications, if you will, but everybody had different setups at home. And I know some people have talked about going back to the lockout situation, but even time of the lockout, players had access to gyms or other private facilities. They just couldn't use the facilities that were their home practice sessions. Now, you had some guys who didn't have access to a facility at all. So the range in what guys were doing as far as training in anticipation of this season is going to be all over the map. And ideally, the teams would like to get them together, train them together, and ramp them up for football. This is why that 21-day ramp-up period was so important for the players' union and the players. Mm-hmm. We know that in training camp, there tends to be a spike, particularly in lower extremity injuries, at around the two-week period. And so when all this conversation was happening about preseason and how much conditioning time there would be, I think that was one of the concerns, was if they came back and ramped up too quickly and then were at too competition level, that would really increase the number of injuries. So everybody felt more comfortable with some acclimation period of getting guys conditioned in the same manner, reintroducing football activity in an unpadded situation, and then moving to padded practices for the 14 days. So, you know, it still could happen. We always do see injuries earlier in the season. We see them in the first couple of preseason games as guys are playing at that intensity for the first time. We don't really know what to expect. They're trying to mitigate the risk by ramping the football activity up, per se, but it's different. So we just got to sit back and watch.
So on Tuesday, the Titans placed rookie offensive tackle Isaiah Wilson on the reserve COVID list. And that list means one of two things: either the player tested positive or he came in contact with someone that tested positive. When you look at those two options and it not being released, which one of those options it is, does that kind of leave opportunity for things to get skewed as far as, okay, this guy tested positive, so he has this amount of time before he comes back. This guy was in contact, so he has that amount of time. Like, does that kind of leave the teams just like some leeway to kind of go back and forth, if you follow me?
Well, it is. There are some variations in terms of how folks are handled, whether they were exposed and test positive or negative, and then if they do test positive, whether that's from ultimately they test positive after being exposed or they come in and are positive to begin with, then if they're not symptomatic, the course of care is a little bit different than if they are symptomatic.
Right.
And much of this mirrors what the CDC guidelines are for return to work, but they have to go through, without getting into the weeds on it, but they are monitoring them for symptoms. They're doing consecutive PCR testing, and basically a time period has to happen where they don't have symptoms. So there's a time frame post the testing where they don't either develop symptoms if they were negative or have symptoms if they were positive. And then they have to return two consecutive negative tests separated by 24 hours. And then the team physicians have to okay their return. If they test positive and have symptoms, it gets a little bit more extended, depending on the level of symptoms they have, because they cannot return until at least 10 days have passed since their first symptoms appeared, and at least 72 hours have passed since the symptoms disappeared, in addition to a couple of other things. So, again, there's an algorithm that they follow, and based on that algorithm, those decisions are made, but the return time could be all over the place. And for those of us who are looking at the injury reports and trying to decide, well, I wonder how long this person would be out versus the next person, you're going to see different return times potentially based on this algorithm. And we're not necessarily going to know who falls into which category, presumably due to privacy concerns.
That is a lot. But I didn't want to bring you on here just to talk COVID. I know in talking to you last year, you shared with me that you really like Delanie Walker, and he's unfortunately moved on, and him moving on has opened the door for Jonnu Smith. And Jonnu Smith suffered a knee injury this past year, was his first year after that injury, what kind of difference is there for when a player is a year removed from an actual injury? Is it at that point when he's at peak operating position?
It really depends on the nature of the injury. I mean, some folks are able to come back and have a season subsequent to an injury that is surprising, that they really don't show any ill effects. Sometimes the more complex injuries require a longer time period to recover from. I mean, certainly when we talk about ACL injuries, because the length of the rehab is so long, it often takes not just the first year that they're back, but into the second season before a player really starts to return to his productivity output from prior injury. But then, and you and I have talked about this before, you take an athlete like Cooper Kupp, who just took charge of his rehab and worked extremely hard to make sure that when he hit the ground running, he wouldn't look that different from his pre-injury self. And he came back and put out a performance that's atypical, but was amazing. So I would not necessarily rule out Jonnu Smith from having a great season just because he had this injury last year. I think that it's funny because you talk to them and they will tell you, you know, I was fine, but I actually feel differently after having another year under my belt. So sometimes it's not even something you can capture. It's something that they report to you when they can look back on it.
You do a lot of fantasy stuff. Is Jonnu Smith, is he a jewel in the Nile, so to speak?
I think so. You know, I look to our colleague Matt Bowen a lot and see who he's got his eyes on from an NFL standpoint. He loves Jonnu Smith. If you look at some of the things he's posted, he actually thinks that he could be one of the breakout players this year. So I always pay attention to what he's saying. And certainly with the role of the tight end in that offense, I think that he's got that opportunity.
Yeah, and before I let you go, I want to take this opportunity to commend you on the work that you did, your report on Alex Smith and just that whole program. That was one of the best ones I've seen, especially, you know, the way you got into it with the injury. So awesome job there. I have to ask you, how did that come about?
Well, thank you. First of all, I really have to credit Alex and his wife, Elizabeth, for being so willing to share their journey with us. If it weren't for them allowing us in for all of the pivotal moments, we wouldn't have been able to put that piece together. And it really, I felt the attention and energy that around it after it aired. And I think part of it was because his injury was so graphic and so difficult for people to process, that is of course why it gets your attention, but I think his tenacity and his resilience is what keeps your attention. How it came about is after Alex got through the initial harrowing part of that injury recovery, he was looking for someone to look to as a roadmap of how to get back. You know, he'd lost a lot of weight, he was very sick after the infection. And he wanted to know who had been through something like that so that he could talk with them and get advice. And his physician, Dr. Robin West, head team physician for the Washington football team, told him, there really isn't anyone. I'm sorry, but there's no one, certainly in the NFL, who's had not only the injury, but the subsequent complications that you've had. And I think that really led him to wanting to document the process, because he thought, you know, maybe if there's somebody else who comes along, if this is really that new, maybe telling this story and documenting it will help someone in the future. And he did that without knowing how it would turn out. Hmm. I give him a ton of credit, because at the point where we met, he wasn't sure he would be able to keep his leg. So his willingness to allow us to document it, and he encouraged us to document it all because he wanted it to be authentic. He knew if we were there for just the highlights, it might not tell the whole story. So he wanted this documented in full, and we all traveled that path together. I knew Dr. West from my medical affiliations outside of ESPN. I'm involved in the sports medicine community because I'm a physical therapist, and so I've known her for years. And when Alex and Elizabeth decided that they wanted to document their story, she made an introduction thinking that I would be a good match given the medical detail involved, and it went from there.
Ended up being not a good match, the perfect match, because like I said, that was an outstanding documentary, and it was one of those ones where at the end I wanted more, you know what I mean? So that lets you know right there that it was good stuff. So I appreciate you coming on. Folks, you need anything when it comes to injuries or predicting them, this is your source, Miss Stefania Bell. You definitely have to go to her, all over ESPN.com and on ESPN just overall. So I appreciate you tuning in. And definitely, Stefania, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. We start our podcast for fantasy football starting next week. So let's keep our fingers crossed the season moves forward and that everybody stays as healthy as they can.
There you have it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Corey Davis, and you're talking with TD.
Me by, that may be what some of these guys on the roster bubble could relate to, right? She keeps on passing me by as far as the opportunity to play on an NFL team. Man, I tell you, when you take these preseason games out of the picture, it makes it a lot harder to evaluate some of these guys. I think really is going to come down to being a little more creative with your practice time. You have to figure out ways to get a true look at these guys that, you know, you look at offensive linemen, for example. I mean, how can you get a true look at them, you know, without pads on? You know, so you have to find ways to get that better opportunity. You look at Darrington Evans, Mike Vrabel actually mentioned Evans as a guy that they want to see during practice actually get tackled because that's what's going to happen in games. And you really have to see the way a guy will respond to that contact, that physical contact. And it brings me to something years ago. It was the draft where Tom Brady got selected. But there was a guy, the San Francisco 49ers selected, by the name of Giovanni Carmazzi. They selected him in the third round out of Hofstra. And I will say this. You know how you have those welcome to the NFL moments? Let me tell you, he got one of those. I forget who. It was the NFL Hall of Fame game, right? So we're talking about the first preseason game. This guy's a third-round pick. He was the one that was going to be the next in line to be that 49ers quarterback, right? He got hit in that game, and they showed the close-up into his helmet. His eyes said, man, I want no part of this. I want to go home. That's what his eyes said, and he never panned out. In that same game, another guy was behind and led his team on a fourth quarter comeback by the name of Tom Brady. So I say all that to say, when you get that actual contact and you can really feel it and see what's happening, that's when you really see the value or what the moxie, the salt that is within a guy. That's when you really see it. It's a lot easier to stand out in practice than it is in actual game situations. So that's something that Mike Vrabel said he wanted to create. I want you to hear this quote when I asked him about that.
Well, I think the evaluation will start here when we get into the meetings and the walkthroughs and then continue. And then when you watch them at practice, you have to evaluate the competitive situations. Can they stay on their feet? Can they tackle? We may have to have, you know, some scrimmages where some of these younger players are in a live situation as it relates to tackling, and it's so critical on special teams. You know, I'm not ready to tell you that we're going to go live on special teams, but, you know, we're going to have to put guys in competitive situations to be able to evaluate them. And, And we've done that in the past when we have had games. So, or scrimmages, and we've split the team up before, and we've had players draft teams, and we've gone out and operated in the stadium, and you know, we'll have to have some of those days.
So another aspect that has to be evaluated and is better evaluated with live type of looks. Now, obviously, in this situation, you wouldn't be able to hit the quarterback, but your guy's rushing the passer, right? You really need to see what you have in a Reggie Gilbert, who is one of those guys that's at the back end of the roster. You got to get a better picture of him. Obviously, you saw him some last year, but you want to continue to evaluate him against the other guys as far as Roberson is concerned. You know Landry is at the top of it, Kamale Correa. But that leads me to the next part that I wanted to talk about, because one of those guys that's supposed to be in the mix is Vic Beasley. Man.
How do you start with this?
Yeah.
This is a hard one to pinpoint, even just to begin to have a conversation, I feel like.
I'll say this. Whatever reason, it absolutely has to be a really good reason. Here's the deal. There was a rap in Atlanta of him not being the hardest worker. Now, I asked Mike Vrabel about that. I asked John Robinson about that, and they both said they're going to wipe the slate clean. So I don't know. Me personally, if I know that this is something that was attached to me in the past, and I know that I'm in a new situation, a one-year deal to prove it, I don't know.
And John Robinson and Mike Vrabel can tell you that the slate is wiped clean all they want, but they only signed him to a one-year deal because there is that little bit of a moniker attached to Vic Beasley's name and his reputation. And unfortunately for him, if that's your reputation, I mean, not showing up on the first day is kind of a bad look. I mean, and no matter how bad you want that slate to be clean, people in the NFL don't forget. Your reputation will stick with you, and first impressions are big. So it is, to me, it's a little just disappointing. And there could be a really good reason as to why he didn't show up. We can speculate that all day, but for a guy who had that question mark going in, no matter how badly you want that slate to be clean, it's just not going to in everyone's mind, especially in a league like the NFL where actions like this, or in this case, non-actions, are taken, you know, as they are in a big way.
It absolutely has to be a really good reason. And, you know, you never ask a guy to put family or football ahead of family. You never ask that. So
especially now.
Family related, hey, man, you know, it's all good. But it's – and I'm not trying to pile on the guy, but, you know, it's just like, dang, you know that this situation is what it is. Right. And of course, not reporting on time doesn't take away from time that he will be actually out there on the field, because we have the ramp up period. But at the same time, there's just messages that are sent. And right. the thing is, it not only sends a bad message to the guys upstairs and to the head coach, but then in the locker room, too. Mm-hmm. You know, your first. Well, I would say mini camp and the OTAs, the virtual part of it, I think that was the first time to interact. And I'm sure he held his own there, but it's just like, this is training camp. Your first training camp with these 54 other guys, 79, well, now after everything, 76 other guys. You're not there. And these are guys who did what they had to do to get there. You're not there. It sends a bad message. And I don't even want to say sends a bad message. It's just
– It can rub guys the wrong way.
Right. It gives guys reason to question.
Yeah, exactly. And these are the guys that are going to have your back whenever the season begins. I mean, Vic Beasley's playing a very valuable role on this team, a role that the Titans need to take it to the next level.
Yeah.
You need to have that trust in not just your coaches, but like you mentioned, too, your teammates as well. And I think the term you can use, I guess, is just rub the wrong way. Because if you're someone that had to use these training camps to get in this position, you aren't as paid as highly as Vic Beasley is. It can rub you the wrong way if he's just not showing up. And everybody's dealing with COVID-19. Everyone that's choosing to be on this team right now that hasn't opted out is they're all dealing with the exact same thing. So that's where the message could be sent, whether he intentionally wanted to send it or not, is going to be received.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where principle is mm-hmm. is the supreme factor with this. And there are going to be guys in that locker room that say, hey, you know what, even if you did have a good reason, they're going to think it, right? Even if you did have a good reason, I had a good reason, but I'm here. So I hope everything is okay with him as far as personal and everything that could be going on outside of football that could prevent him from being at St. Thomas Sports Park. But at the same time, it's like, hey, it better be a really good reason. And, you know, he was the offseason acquisition from a pass rush perspective. And that's the way that they address the pass rush. It really needs to be something that comes through for them if they want to take their game to the next level.
Exactly, because that's the one thing. I mean, we've talked about it before. Outside of the Miami Dolphins, they were the worst pass rushing team in the NFL, and it was a really inconsistent pass rush as well. So you bring this guy in with hopes of if you fill in that void, then you can handle teams like the Chiefs. You know, you're like Patrick Mahomes is going to have all day to throw on you. I mean, you play to get past where you left off last season, and you make acquisitions to plug in, I guess, those holes, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a valuable role that he's being looked at to fill on the defense. And I'm like you, like, first and foremost, you hope he's okay, or everything is okay, that it's a valid reason. But, I mean, he's going to be one of the leaders in your defense because of the importance of his position and because of the role that he's asked to perform.
And that being said, you got to be there. But, you know, he is the quote-unquote crown jewel of the offseason. One of the guys that took a look at the top 32 off seasons, right? One from 1 to 32. He ranked them all, is our next guest, Bill Barnwell. So we're going to go to a break, and we'll be right back with one of ESPN's NFL reporters. We'll be right back.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. We are now going to go to the German Performance Options Hotline, and we're going to bring in one of my teammates, man, a guy who he ranks everything that you want, everything that you could think of. And as I said, he's one of my teammates at ESPN, Bill Barnwell. Bill, what's going on, man?
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I appreciate you coming on. I wanted to, you know, kind of take it back to the 2011 days when the New York Giants, they were balling. I know that's your squad, so we had to bring you in, right?
I mean, the issue here is that, like, if you were to ask me, like, I know that the peak of Dipset was not necessarily recently. Like, I know it's like a recent thing, but just to hear 2011 and realize, oh, like, next year that's a decade. Like, that just makes me feel so old.
Man, you and me both, man, to think. And you know, the thing that's so crazy is you can remember stuff so vividly from that long ago, like it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm, 100%. And, you know, it just feels like I know in my head it didn't happen last year or 2 years ago, but I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe that was like 2015 or 2016. Nope, 2011. Man, I'm just getting old.
Well, I tell you this much. If we are blessed to look back on this 2020 a decade from now, I tell you one thing, man, it's definitely going to be the most unique year that I've ever experienced. What about you?
I mean, it's been so crazy. You know, it's just like, even in this year, you know, I went to the combine for a couple of days, and that was the last thing I really did before, you know, we all kind of got locked down. And I have to admit, I would have preferred to choose a more exciting, warm destination than Indianapolis, Indiana in February. But that was like the last thing I did in my life where it was normal. And I was like, you know, go to dinner with some friends and, you know, talk to some people at the combine and just think about, oh, life is still the same on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, it was the last thing I did before the things kind of shut down. And so now that we're starting, you know, kind of training camps and we're starting the NFL season and getting to that again, you know, it feels like the entire off season I've been in my apartment. So it's exciting to, like, you know, even though it's obviously still up in the air and there's still a lot happening, it's cool to see that, like, you know, like we're progressing a little bit, even though it feels like that was years ago. It was only a few months ago.
Yeah, for sure. And I have to tip my cap to you because, you know, a lot of the things that you put out, it involves a list. And, man, I don't care what list you put out there, how accurate it is, there's always going to be someone in that rare corner of the earth that's going to say, man, this guy has no clue what he's talking about. When, in fact, you do. So it's just like, man, I salute anybody who does post that feature list like that.
I try. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, I try to watch everyone in the league, and obviously from year to year, it's tough. You know, you don't get to see the same as someone like you who's covering, you know, Tennessee so closely and, you know, getting to see that every week improvement, every week stuff, seeing kind of guys pop in and out of the lineup, you know, so I think I have to rely on you know, of course, the Great Nation writers and people like that to, you know, get a sense of, like, what's happening, you know, on the ground from team to team, but you know, you do get a sense of, like, you know, sort of how things compare. And it's funny because you'll see, like, a lot of the same arguments from team to team, you know, where it's like, if you listen to fans, like, you'll hear fans, not Tennessee, because Tennessee is actually a pretty good offensive line, but you'll hear fans say, like, oh, we got the worst offensive line in the league. Oh, the refs call everything against us. And it's like, I hear that from about 18 different fan bases every week. So, like, you know, you just kind of hear the same arguments in some ways, which is funny. But then, you know, I think you just get a good sense of, like, understanding what's happening in the league, what trends are going on. You know, and so I think it's cool to kind of get a sense of, like, you know, what's happening in all these different places, because the NFL is such a, you know, a fast league. Everything's happening at the same time. It's so difficult to kind of watch everything at once. So, you know, it's a really fun league to cover from that national perspective, because you get to see so many different great players and understand so much try to understand what's happening, you know, in so many different places around the NFL.
Yeah, it's like every fan believes there's a conspiracy against their team. But, you know, you just kind of work through it. And one of the things that teams can do to negate this quotation marks conspiracy is have a solid off season. And you went in and you ranked the off seasons from 1 to 32. As you know, this is a Titan centric show. So we have to get into where you had the Titans at number 25. I guarantee you, you know, there are many Titans fans who are upset with you for that, but I want to give you the chance to just kind of explain where you looked to kind of come up with that. As far as starting off with what went right for the Titans during the offseason?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, the work they did this offseason, the biggest thing they had to do was re-signing Ryan Tannehill and re-signing Derrick Henry. And when I handed out that grade, that was before the Derrick Henry franchise tag had been taken care of, where they'd given him an extension. Obviously, losing Jack Conklin hurt. But let's talk about what's right, like you said. So I think the Tannehill deal, I like re-signing Tannehill. I like the ability to get him off the franchise tag in February, because then they were able to franchise Henry, which reduced some of his leverage. But my only concern there was the idea that they were going to basically guarantee him 3 years. I thought it was a lot. Typically, you know, for that sort of contract, I would have figured a two-year guarantee would have got it done, but maybe they didn't have the leverage. Maybe they just wanted to get the deal done as quickly as possible. But guaranteeing that third year for a guy who was, you know, only really, what, a backup, a guy who was, they paid $2 million last year when Miami picked up part of his contract in that trade. You know, it's just a scary proposition. It could work out great. He was phenomenal last year, but I think that's why I'm a little skeptical or a little hesitant to embrace that move, even though I like re-signing him. And then with Henry, I think I'd bump him up a little bit. I think the Henry contract worked out pretty well. I mean, obviously, it's a lot of money. It's more than, you know, would have been if they hadn't re-signed him at all. But I think getting that deal done for basically two franchise tags in terms of the contract, I think is pretty good, all things considered. So I think I have issues with signing any running back. I'm very skeptical of stuff like that. But I think all things considered, they did an okay job there. But I think they did lose some talent. I think even if you're a Tennessee fan, you know, and you're optimistic about someone like Isaiah Wilson or Jonathan Joseph, you know, there's some key players who left this roster last year.
Yeah, and I think that's a part of what went wrong. And for me, when I look at this offseason and look at what went wrong, the first thing I look at is the pass rush situation. And you actually touched on that. And now it becomes even bigger because you have Vic Beasley, who didn't report to camp on time. He's yet to report. So that's a whole another black guy on the pass rushing situation. What's your outlook? Like, why did you pinpoint the pass rusher as part of the things that went wrong?
Yeah, so let's say Vic Beasley does report at some point, because that's what I was sort of figuring when I was making this analysis, when I did it. I mean, you look at Vic Beasley's career, he had that really impressive season the year they went to the Super Bowl. But even looking at his performance during that season, watching all of his stats, looking at the numbers, sort of the underlying stats, I mean, the fact total was great. They didn't have that sort of production that was sort of, you know, underpinning that. When you have a guy who has, I think, 15 and a half sacks, as Beasley did that year, he's usually dominant. He's drawing holding penalties. Mm-hmm. He's hitting the quarterback when he's not getting sacks. He's, you know, really making an impact. And that wasn't really the case. He kind of was able to turn a really high percentage of his pressures into sacks. And so over the last couple of years, after that breakout season, he has not been able to hit that level. He was pretty good during the second half last year. But again, I think he's a guy who, you know, unfortunately hasn't really developed beyond the guy we saw in his first year or two in Atlanta, a guy who's a great speed rusher who can get around the edge, who has really impressive bend, but there's not really a plan B or a plan C for him. And I think when he comes across better offensive linemen, he really tends to struggle. So, you know, in terms of signing him to a one-year deal, you know, I understand wanting to improve the pass rush. I'm all for that. It makes total sense. You know, obviously when they lost Cam Wake last year early in the season, he was playing really well, I thought, before the injury. You know, they wanted to bring in someone to supplement, help out Harold Landry, and that makes total sense. But I just don't like Vic Beasley's all that great as a football player. I think he's a solid starter, but not someone you want to commit that much money to. And I think the other part of it is, let's say he breaks out. Let's say he has a great season. Well, because it's only a one-year contract, they are not able to have any sort of leverage. They have to franchise him, or they'd have to basically, you know, make him a significant offer to keep him around. Whereas if it had been, let's say, a two-year contract or a three-year contract with 1 year guaranteed, they would have had some leverage and had some ability to, you know, keep him around if there is a breakout season. So it's tough for me to see a scenario where he's so good that he's worth the $9.5 million, but also not good enough so good, but then, you know, also not good enough that you don't want to re-sign him and aren't stuck having to pay a premium to do that. So, yeah. You know, and I think obviously I would not have anticipated this. Maybe Tennessee would have anticipated this. I can't say. And of course, they're still talking. You know, there still have been some conversations with Jadeveon Clowney, but I think at that price tag, I much would have rather have had Jadeveon Clowney than Vic Beasley.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I didn't even think of that. So that's a great point that you mentioned. It's a catch 22, right? If you don't mm-hmm. sign him now, you didn't address it. You do sign him, and let's say he has a really good season. Now you got to figure out, okay, that one good season with us, is that something that would make me want to sign him more? You know, that's what John Robinson has to consider. So that's an excellent point there. So all things being considered, if you mm-hmm. could have done, if they could have done something differently from your perspective, it would have been to sign Clowney instead of Vic Beasley?
I think so, yeah. I think even knowing that let's say Clowney wouldn't have taken that same offer Beasley did, I would have rather gone out and maybe spent the extra $3 million or $4 million once Clowney's market wasn't there and signed Clowney to that one-year deal. And hey, maybe they'll use this opportunity. Maybe they'll say with the Beast situation, maybe if he doesn't report, they'll move on. Maybe they can void his contract. Maybe they'll bring in Clowney on that one-year deal. But I think even given the numbers, which have been better for Beasley, I think if you ask people around the league, I think if you watch those two guys play, Clowney's a more productive player and a more impactful player. So, you know, I think that's the big concern. And I have to say, and I think you know more at this than I would, Teron, I still don't understand how or why Logan Ryan is a free agent. Mm. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he had his moments last year where he did you know, teams threw at him, and obviously he is getting older, but a guy who I think is a leader, you know, a guy who I think is such a productive player, who is, you know, such a playmaker, who made so many plays last year, so many big plays last year for Tennessee, a guy who, you know, just knowing where people need to line up, putting them in the right place. Obviously, there are veterans in that secondary, but I can't believe that, you know, Logan Ryan is not only not signed by Tennessee, but just not signed at all at this point in the offseason.
Yeah, it's crazy. And actually seeing him firsthand as far as his impact in the locker room and obviously on the field, it's crazy to think that he is unsigned. But it seems like that's one of those things that just is a circumstance that results from what we're looking at now with this pandemic. Mm-hmm. It's right. Crazy. It's crazy. 'Cause I never would have thought Clowney would still be out there either, you know. Yeah. But it just who knows, man? What will happen? We talked a lot about the defense, so now I want to kind of flip it to the other side and look at the offense. Mm-hmm. And you have your post where you rank the offensive weapons, and mm-hmm. you obviously went from 1 to 32. The Titans came in at number 22. Now, in 2019, they were 21st. In 18, they were 14th. What reasoning did you consider in giving them the 22nd rank?
Mm-hmm. So just for reference here, basically what I'm looking at, I'm saying, hey, throw out the quarterback, throw out the offensive line, throw out the coaching staff with a league-average quarterback, league-average coaching staff, league-average offensive line. Who would have the best offense? So just running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends, all we're considering here without the impact of the quarterback. So the other thing is that I'm looking at it, basically I'm sort of weighting wide receivers more than I am running backs and tight ends, and that's because wide receivers typically get paid more, they're seen as more valuable, they get more in trade returns. So typically wide receivers are going to be more important than tight ends or running backs. And obviously with Tennessee having, you know, a top five running back or top six running back in Derrick Henry, you know, if I was focusing on the running backs as being more valuable, they'd be higher up in the rankings than they are. But in terms of the personnel they have, I mean, obviously it starts with Henry. He's the focal point of the offense. Great player. I think, you know, underrated as a receiver. I mean, they had that long screen pass or touchdown early in the season. You know, I think a guy who, you know, even though it's not his game, even though he's not going to be, you know, Austin Eckler anytime soon, like a guy who I think, you know, can do everything. When it comes to being a running back and has been healthy, has been durable. I mean, nothing you could say about Derrick Henry, nothing you can really criticize. So obviously it's a great place to start. I mean, the second tier running back situation has not been ideal. Deion Lewis didn't work out, obviously got cut. You know, we're looking at Darrington Evans, the third round pick, as being a guy who would step in. There's not much depth there at the running back position. Evans could be a great player, but we just don't know until we actually see him on the football field. So, you know, I don't dock it too much for that when it comes to running back depth, but that is something that comes into mind. At tight end, or again, this is a new group. I think, you know, guys like Michael Pruitt, Anthony Firkser are underrated, could play a reasonable role here and there, but obviously it depends a lot on Jonnu Smith, who, you know, has had to be the guy for stretches. When Delanie Walker's been hurt, I think a very talented athlete, a guy who, you know, has had stretches where he's looked very promising. You know, I kind of wonder at this point, having seen him play for a while now, you know, having seen him, you know, get regular reps as the number one tight end for most of last year, for you know, a chunk of the previous year, a team that's always played a lot of two tight end sets while he's been here, you know, I'm wondering what his feeling is. Last year, career highs in receptions, career highs in receiving yards, 44 for 439. You know, I think he has the ability to be more than that as an athlete, as a receiver. I guess I wonder, you know, can he take that next step? I sort of expected more, maybe, in terms of his receiving production. Obviously, he was blocking a lot. That's going to be a big role for him in this offense because it's going to be such a run-first offense. But I wonder if he can be more of a threat in the red zone or be more of a threat when it comes to the passing game. And then the receivers, a wide receiver, obviously, A.J. Brown is a stud. I mean, he's phenomenal. Like, he was my offensive rookie of the year pick, and I thought he should have been. I thought he should have been the winner. Obviously, not was the case, but I think a phenomenal football player, a guy who, you know, I think people are going to realize this year nationally how good he is and how scary he is with the football in his hands after the catch. And he was the, you know, he was the best yards after catch guy in football a year ago. And a guy who just makes big plays happen. I think he is already a superstar. And I think getting more volume, getting more throws from Tannehill, getting a full season with Tannehill, hopefully, is going to, you know, sort of bump his numbers up accordingly, and I think he's going to be a legit number one NFL wide receiver in 2020. But then after that, not a lot after that. I mean, Corey Davis, obviously disappointing. They turned down his option, a guy who I think is talented, who has more than what we've seen from him, but I think a guy who has to put a full season together where he is productive and making plays and has to figure out, you know, what his game is going to be. Obviously, he doesn't have to be the number one guy anymore. He isn't expected to be the number one guy anymore. We don't know. Obviously, he's on the PUP list to start the year, it seems like, but a guy who, you know, it seems like took a step backwards last year. I mean, I think, you know, we were all hoping, hey, 891 yards in your sophomore season, you know, get to 1,000 yards next year, show us what you can do. And instead, you know, kind of took a step backwards in a lot of ways. So hoping that maybe not having that pressure of being the leading guy might help him have a better season. And certainly a lot of motivation as he hits the final year of his rookie deal and he had his option decline. But then when you look at the roster after that, it's Adam Humphries, a guy who was disappointing last year, injuries part of it, but a guy who, you know, they paid a lot of money to and was not a really impactful player. And then the depth chart behind those guys just is not great. Scotty Hollister, Kyle Williams, Khalif Raymond, Nick Westbrook. I mean, these are all street free agents and guys who, you know, are you know, maybe hopefully useful special teamers, but you would not want to plug into a regular role. So I think, you know, there's a lot of upside here. You know, Henry obviously is playing at a high level already. A.J. Brown could be a top 10 receiver this year. Corey Davis could be, you know, one of the 10 best number two wideouts in the league. Adam Humphries could be a top 10 slot receiver. Jonathan Smith could be a top 15 tight end, I think. But, you know, at some point it has to be about what are you delivering as opposed to what are you promising. So I'm optimistic about Brown, but these other wide receivers, I think I want to see more from them in 2020 before I can push Tennessee up the rankings any further.
And we're talking to Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Bill, now that you said all that about the receiving core, which I definitely agree there is some left to be desired, and there's so much potential in Corey Davis, but there's still the question mark of him having these three seasons where you haven't had a 1,000-yard season yet. When you look at all of that, and then if you go back, if you were in that position – as far as a personnel guy, would you have drafted one of these receivers in this tremendous draft class?
You know, it's always tough to say, right? You know, I feel like you could make a case that if it's such a good draft class, why not get one of those guys? Why not add more weapons for Ryan Tannehill? You're always going to need more weapons. It's always going to be something you want. But this is a team that I think, you know, did draft for need, right? At the end of the day, because they let Jack Conklin go, they went out and used the first time picking Isaiah Wilson, and you can't fault them for that. I mean, they just need to add more depth to tackle. Obviously, Dennis Kelly is going to figure in there, but you know, it makes sense. Hey, we're going to be a run first team. Let's go out and get that tackle. You know, and I think Christian Fulton in the second round again. You know, you got to figure the cornerback is a place of transition for them. Obviously, losing Ryan, Malcolm Butler's contract is coming up soon. Dory Jackson's contract situation is coming up soon. You know, it makes sense. Hey, go out and get a young cornerback who's going to be, maybe if, not even if he's your guy next year, but your guy in 2021, 2022, who you can develop into a starter, you know, because you have a couple cornerbacks you're already pretty happy with, or you already feel like you can start. That makes sense to me. So, yeah, I think they seem to draft more for need than for the best player available or for the best situation available. And I can't fault them. You know, I think maybe if there had been a tight end who was at the same, you know, at the same level or at the same tier as a lot of these wide receivers in this draft class, I think it would have made total sense because you want to be a run first team. You want to play out of 12 personnel or 22 personnel, get your two tight ends on the field and run the football. I think that would have made total sense. As a wide receiver, I mean, after AJ broke out, I could definitely see the argument for drafting a wide receiver to replace Corey Davis in the long term. But at the end of the day, I feel like, you know, I understand why they did what they did, and we'll see in a couple of years. I mean, if they drafted the right guys, obviously, you know, even if you had the right plan, it comes down to picking the right players, whether it's a wide receiver or a tackle or a cornerback.
And before we let you go, Bill, just looking at this Titans team, do you put them in the playoffs? Are they a playoff team?
I think so. I think that, especially with the extra playoff team being added, I mean, obviously, they're a team that for years now have been right on the cusp. You know, they've been either the last team in or the first team out when it's come to the postseason. And I think that's kind of where I see them again in 2020. Obviously, I think so much depends on Ryan Tannehill, if he can keep up being the player he was a year ago. And I think more than anything else, if he can stay healthy. Health was a concern for him his last 3 years in Miami, missed a ton of time. Last year came to the lineup, was healthy, was very productive, very valuable. I think the best acquisition of the 2019 offseason was Ryan Tannehill. I think I don't think you can even make another argument for like who else it could have been for what they gave up, what they paid him to get a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback for a fourth round pick and $2 million is pretty incredible for John Robinson. So to me, I think, you know, a talented team. I think we saw the best version of them in the postseason last year. You know, with this team, I think if you're a Titans fan, you have to admit they're not always the most consistent team. They don't always show that form from week to week. But we know their upside is legitimate Super Bowl contender. So I think we're going to see enough of that this year if they're going to make it into the postseason.
There you have it, Bill Barnwell. He does great work on ESPN.com. Make sure you guys tune into everything that he's doing. Bill, I appreciate it, And we'll definitely have to do this again soon, man. Stay safe and take care, and keep putting out that great content.
Thank you, Tron. Anytime.
All right. Appreciate it.
This is Jayon Brown, and you're now talking with TD.
Come on, Meph.
Microphone checker.
Yeah, back from the break talking with TD. That's right, the Rockwilder. Wanted to get you some go-go music, right? Get you up and going, you know what I'm saying? Because this is an opportunity for everyone to watch some live sports, man. Major League Baseball is back. The NFL is getting there with camp, and you got NBA coming too. And, man, NHL too, right? The Preds are going to get going. And, you know, this is the precise spot where you can get all the Preds coverage, all the games, and those things. So make sure you guys stay tuned to ESPN Nashville, 102.5 The Game. I want to get into what's next, and we touched on like the first 5 days of camp and how those are projected to go. So let's start off with the sixth day and just kind of get into some of the things, because remember, as our guest earlier, Stefania Bell, so eloquently painted a picture of, okay, you have to have that ramp-up period, the 21-day ramp-up period. So just to get a kind of a look at how that ramp-up period is going to start, after everything is cleared from the testing perspective, and they will continue to get tests, but after the guys are cleared to actually be in the building more extensively and take part in the different things that are going to happen, the first thing that they do is they have their equipment fitting, right? And then they have other procedural work. They have to actually take a COVID brief. It's kind of like an online tutorial on how to conduct themselves. And just, it goes back to what we said about, you know, not going to a nightclub or you know, doing foolish things.
Miami Marlins.
Yeah. I'm sure all of that will be in there. So that's what they have to do then. And then on the seventh day, they're going to start to begin their normal meetings, the lifting. They'll have their walkthroughs, because they're not just going to hit the ground running and go out there and, hey, you know, full speed, we're going to go 7-on-7, then a team period, then one on. No, they're not going to do that. They're going to walk through and just ramp it up. Another thing that has to happen for the guys, and, you know, if you think back to your first day on the college campus, you didn't know where anything was. You know what I mean? You're looking at your schedule and you're like, oh, I got to be at Truth Hall. Where is Truth Hall as opposed to Cope Hall? Like, you had to understand that the campus that you're on. Now, obviously, it's not as spread out as a campus, but these rookies, you know, they got to know. They have to know, okay, when it's time for conditioning, you know, or rehab or anything like that, I got to go here. And that's something that Mike Vrabel definitely got into. He said that all of the rookies, except for Darrington Evans, were actually in the facility before it shut down. So they have to get their guys acclimated to where the cafeteria is and, you know, the different meeting rooms. They got to find out where, you know, Coach Frank Pirano's offices are and everything like that. So there's a lot to learn within the building. And remember, the building has been kind of reworked. So where it may seem like one thing is may not be where one thing is. So there's a lot for the rookies to try to get under wraps. So as they get through that process, then you get into the ramp-up period where you're going to gradually go from walkthrough to half speed to, you know, helmets and shoulder pads, right? And then you'll actually be able to have a full practice. So that's something that's major for these guys getting back into the swing of things. I just wonder, at what point is there going to be an addition, right, to kind of juice things up? Mm-hmm. Because everyone, as you mentioned during the break, Jadeveon Clowney is kind of like the talk of the Titans. And he's been the offseason talk of the Titans outside of A.J. Brown, Derrick Henry, and Ryan Tannehill. Hey, I don't know what's going to happen, right? Mike Vrabel was asked if there are any pending meetings or anything on the schedule as far as Clowney coming in to get get examined by the team doctors so they could go ahead and sign the deal. And obviously with Vic Beasley and his status, that places even more of significance for Clowney to be a part of the team. And we know that he's the best landing spot. But Mike Vrabel said that there isn't a pending visit. Nothing is scheduled as of Tuesday. Maybe that'll change.
Well, that could have changed today. I mean, that could change at any point. Yeah. I feel like this whole situation has been the most fluid free agency in the history of the NFL, given the circumstances of COVID-19, his injury questions, and his on-field performance.
Yeah, it could definitely change. But one thing that I think was kind of funny is just you could sense the frustration from Mike Vrabel when he was asked about Clowney. Let's go ahead and let the listeners hear what he said.
John, right now, JD is not under contract with the Tennessee Titans. That's all I can tell you guys. You know, he's a free agent, one that we've had contact with, but he's not under contract with the Tennessee Titans. So that's all I can tell you.
There you have it. That's really the summary of what the situation is. So I'll tell you this, though. Keep hope alive. I don't want you Titans fans to, you know, get depressed. The season is still possibly, I don't want to say possibly, let's be positive. The season is still something that is likely to happen. So make sure that you keep your hopes up. You got to just, like I said, keep hope alive. Even if they don't sign Clowney, you know, this team is still a solid team and they're still a contender. And either way, I think they're in good shape to give you guys an outstanding season. I plan to give you guys an outstanding season as well as Elijah. So make sure you stay tuned as we continue to bring you awesome content. Definitely open for any feedback. You guys have any topics that you would like us to cover, make sure you give us a shout. You could reach me on Twitter. You could, you know, subscribe and rate and review. So make sure you do that. Shout out to Stefania Bell and Bill Barnwell for tuning in. That's the show for this week. We'll be back next week with more from training camp. So stay tuned. God bless. Good night.